and the operator with my pocket calculator.
Welcome once again to Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community here on WCOM-LP, Chapel Hill and Carrboro. This is Ernie Hood. I am a freelance science writer, and each week here on the program, we bring you cutting-edge information about what's going on in science here in the Triangle area, which, as I'm sure you know, is one of the world's leading hubs of scientific research and development. We welcome your comments or questions via email at radioinvivo@earthlink.net, and we have a website for the program, which you can find at home.earthlink.net/radioinvivo. You can access all of our past programs on the website, and after nearly a year and a half of doing the program, it's now quite an extensive archive on the wide variety of topics we've featured here on the show, so we encourage you to check it out. And Radio In Vivo is also available as a podcast on iTunes. All you have to do is go to the iTunes site, search Radio In Vivo, and you'll get right to the podcast. And you can subscribe and get it downloaded to you automatically every week. And, of course, we've always had podcasts available on the station's website as well at communityradio.coop. I want to mention that Radio In Vivo and WCOM have benefited from the support of the multi-talented Claudio Oswald Niedvarok. Claudio is a master storyteller and a performing poet and author, and he is now the latest addition to the roster of DJs here on WCOM. He and musician-composer John Paul McClellan co-host a show called Claudio's Speakeasy here on the station on Tuesdays from 10 to 11 a.m. So please give them a listen and check out Claudio's website at www.claudioarts.com. Radio In Vivo is underwritten by the CIIT Centers for Health Research in Research Triangle Park. CIIT is a renowned leader in environmental health sciences research and education. For more than 25 years, CIIT has contributed science that guides sound regulatory decisions and protects the health of the public. WCOM and Radio In Vivo thank CIIT for its support. And we are also underwritten by the National Evolutionary Synthesis Center in Durham. NESENT is a collaborative effort of Duke University, UNC Chapel Hill, and North Carolina State University, and is sponsored by the National Science Foundation. NESENT's mission is to facilitate broadly synthetic research to address fundamental questions in evolutionary biology by providing an environment for fertile interactions among scientists. And Radio In Vivo and WCOM thank NESENT for its support. Well, today on Radio In Vivo, we are going to be learning all about the work of an organization dedicated to the promotion of public understanding of and support for bioscience research here in North Carolina, which is actually pretty similar to the mission of this very program. The group is called the North Carolina Association for Biomedical Research. They have their headquarters right here in the Triangle in Raleigh, and have been working to advance North Carolinians' appreciation for the remarkable benefits of bioscience research and careers since the organization was founded in 1989. Joining me today on Radio In Vivo is the NCABR's Deputy to the President for Programs and Communications, Suzanne Wood Wilkeson. And Suzanne is also a newlywed.
Yes, thank you.
Suzanne has been with the NCABR since 1998, when she graduated from UNC Chapel Hill with degrees in journalism and political science. Welcome to Radio In Vivo, Suzanne.
Well, thank you, Ernie.
Why don't you start out by telling us a little bit more about the North Carolina Association for Biomedical Research beyond the brief description I gave in my introduction?
Sure. We, as you said, are a statewide science education nonprofit, and we've been around since about 1989, and our focus is to encourage the public support and understanding of bioscience research, and that really translates to an informed public and students who are prepared to enter into bioscience careers. We have a wealth of careers out there, and we have, for the past 17-18 years, worked to connect the citizens of North Carolina with the research enterprise that we're so proud of, and to bring them up close and personal with scientists at our research institutions throughout the state, and to provide them the information they need for decisions in their lives, be it lifestyle, health, and career.
Well, with something I'm curious about is with the North Carolina Biotechnology Center located right here, and several other organizations that support biomedical research, what unique niche does the NCABR occupy?
We are really the vehicle for getting information to the public. We do a number of programs that focus on a variety of audiences, say K-12 school teachers or the media and the scientific community, where we take the expertise and the curricula developed in part with funding and support from the Biotechnology Center. We connect it with the teachers. We have a network of 2,000 plus teachers that we have been working with since about 1994, and it is our mission to make sure that they have the professional development they need, or that the science journalists at newspapers and radios and television stations have the background material they need for scientifically sound stories. We are that that vehicle for getting the information to the public through our programs and our resources, print and online resources.
I see. And where does your support come from?
We are funded in part by members and supporters, and also grants. And our members and supporters really run the gamut. They are the leaders in North Carolina's bioscience research enterprise, from business and industry and academic institutions. The entire university system of North Carolina would be a member, and then also foundations and nonprofit research organizations, government agencies like the EPA and the National Institutes of Environmental Health Sciences. Mm-hmm. It really runs the gamut. We do have some individual members as well who are concerned with the issues, both from the scientific community and school teachers. And then the grant funding. We're always turning out proposals, hoping to do a science literacy program in different various communities.
So. Well, that's part of the scientific enterprise right there, isn't
right,
it?
Right, right, right. Yes.
Well, Suzanne, as you've mentioned, one of the primary elements of your mission is to provide materials and support for educators here in the state,
right.
Particularly grades K through 12. Can you tell us a little bit more about some of the types of programs that you run for teachers here in
sure.
North Carolina?
We have a series of professional development workshops that we've been hosting since 1994. And what we do is we take teachers, usually in groups of 20, to various research institutions, to our member facilities, and we take them for a day. And we review either a curriculum module that we have created, or typically that the National Institutes of Health has created. They have a whole fleet of resources that are just terrific and available for free for teachers. But we find that it helps to take the teachers to a research facility where we can walk them through the modules and do some activities with the teachers, highlighting some really key elements of those resources. And then the really added plus is to have the scientists come into the classroom and talk to the teachers about their work. And that is, I think, the number one draw for our programs, is the interaction that we provide the teachers with our scientists. They go, we hear in our evaluations of the programs and in emails from grateful teachers that is really what really energizes them. And they go back to the classroom with stories that they can share with their students about the researcher they met at UNC or at a GlaxoSmithKline or a Duke or wherever, and they can talk about that researcher's work currently and the career path of that researcher. There are a lot of stories that can be shared with the students, and that's a very important process to keep these teachers informed on an ongoing basis. They deserve this kind of support.
Absolutely. And seen the RX for Science Literacy
yes.
Series, something we probably could all use.
Right, that is the name of our series.
And those are the workshops for teachers?
Yes.
Okay. Looking over the rundown of recent workshops that you've run, you appear to cover a wide variety of scientific topics.
Hot topics, yes. Yeah. We're always polling the teachers, asking them, what do you want to learn about? And then we're out and about in the research community ourselves with our finger on the pulse and figuring out what do we need to share with them. And they come to us and tell us we want to learn more about forensic science, of course. That is so hot these days.
Right, right.
And other various topics, cloning and stem cell research and environmental issues. We poll them frequently to find what are you curious about, and we try to match that with our subject matter. From we have talked about human genetic variation and chemicals in the environment, and we have had some forensic programs, evolution, of course. That's a new program that we've adopted. Mm-hmm. And we really do cover a wide variety of issues. And then, as you said, the prescription for science literacy curriculum module that we created in 1994 is the foundation of this series. It was an original workshop that we created back in 94 that covers information about the bioscience research process and what basic biomedical research is, and how animals are involved in that process and the care and use of those animals. That is the very core of that series. So that's our long popular program that we've held the longest, is the prescription for science literacy.
I see. And do you find, I would assume that most of the science teachers themselves probably have not been professionally involved in the industry itself. So it must be very educational for them to get a hands-on,
absolutely,
first-person look at how it all works.
We do. We deal with K through 12, and many of the teachers do have scientific backgrounds, undergraduate degrees, but some, mm-hmm, in the younger levels do not. And all of them across the board are fascinated with the information that we share. And our speakers, we're just very, very lucky to have such fantastic scientific superstars who do a very, very good job of talking about their science in a language that we can all understand and appreciate. And so that's really critical of boiling down this sometimes complicated science, sometimes ethically sticky. You know, we need to talk about the different aspects of bioscience research, and our speakers do a fantastic job.
Sure. It must be very rewarding for them also to speak to lay people and kids. And
absolutely. We find they enjoy talking about their work. They're very proud of it. And we would like to see more kids going into scientific careers. So if one story can get back to a student, and we can make the connection of this researcher at this institution has this bit of advice, that's a fantastic thing.
Sure. Well, why is it such an important part of your organization's mission to provide these types of professional development activities for the teachers?
Sure. Well, at the very beginning, there was a look at how do we reach the greatest number of people in North Carolina with limited resources. Uh-huh. And we found that working with school teachers who have the ability to reach so many young North Carolinians was the best multiplier factor for us. You know, the average maybe middle and high school teacher may reach 100 or so students a year. So if we can provide them information, they will, over the course of several years, reach thousands of students collectively. And that's a great impact. And then also, more recently, within the past 10 years, we've really focused in on the education of the media, because they too reach so many people with what they write and talk about, the stories they cover. So that has been, how can we use our resources, which are, you know, limited, and reach the greatest number of North Carolinians as possible? And that's been through the teachers and also through the news media.
I see. And given that you've been in existence since 89, mm-hmm, you know, it's quite a track record now. Have you seen a trend? Have you seen an impact develop from these activities in general?
We definitely have a following. It's amazing. The folks who have been through our programs consistently tell us they want to come back. And our challenge is to reach new people that have not yet attended our programs. But, you know, just looking at the teacher population, those who have attended, it is usually unanimous on the evaluations. They want to come back for more, and that's just what we want to hear. And sure, when we do a debate in biomedicine or a science in the cinema program for the general public, we almost always get unanimous, we want to come back for more programs, and that is what we want to hear. Now, reaching those other people, getting those rooms even more packed, is our goal, is our challenge, is to make sure other people, which is, I'm so glad we're here today, I'm here today, mm-hmm, to advertise some of our programs, because it is our mission, is to get this out to as many North Carolinians as possible.
Terrific. My guest on Radio In Vivo this morning is the North Carolina Association of Biomedical for Biomedical Research. Got to get that
perfect
thing, preposition right. The Deputy to the President for Programs and Communications, Suzanne Wood Wilkerson. Suzanne, I'd like to turn now to the many activities and programs your group runs or supports for students themselves. Can you give us kind of a broad overview of all that?
Sure. We do work with children, students, in the capacity of going to career conventions or fairs and providing materials directly to them about bioscience careers. And we do that in Greensboro every spring. We do a convention there, and we always bring a speaker with us to talk about a variety of topics. And we've talked about animal related careers, veterinary careers, and other careers where you can work with animals, because so many students enjoy working with animals, love animals.
Sure.
And we've talked about biotechnology careers and just future careers that they should consider. So we do have a speaker series, and we provide materials at a booth, and we do have a number of publications that we have available for students that are available on our website, www.ncbr.org. And two examples of publications that go directly to the students would be the Lucky Puppy Coloring Workbook, which is really geared toward the younger set, maybe the first or second graders, and that talks about how a puppy benefited from veterinary research. And then we also have the What's the Point of Bioscience Research, which is for a slightly older student, more of the middle school age, talking about issues like asthma and broken bones from athletic injuries, issues that would be important to that age group. And we do distribute those widely and have had multiple printings of each piece. And it's interesting that the Lucky Puppy, which is geared towards the young children, is still a popular piece for the adults we come in contact, for their grandchildren. And then we do, whenever I see teenagers at the career fairs, I say, you know, do you babysit? And we have a lot of babysitters out there. It's like, well, take some copies. This will, you know, keep the kids quiet and they'll learn while they're coloring.
Sure.
So we've actually...
I know I enjoyed...
The coloring book.
Coloring it myself.
It is. It's a fun piece. And so
didn't
we
stay inside the lines too well, but...
That doesn't matter, but it's the message. So we have worked hard to see how that piece can be used by the older kids to help teach the younger children. And so between our materials and then a new website that we have, it's the aboutbioscience.org. It's we just launched it in October. We call it the North Carolina's Bioscience Clearinghouse. Mm-hmm. And on that site... we have a lot of information for students and the public about careers and general hot topics in bioscience research. So we are working through the teachers primarily to encourage students to log on and search our careers, because they can look, they can plug in a salary range or the number of years they think they want to go to school, and they can find what careers will pop up and that meets that criteria. Mm-hmm. And we are adding to that site all the time, and it is a great resource for the students who are looking for a career or writing a paper for their high school.
Sure.
And so we have a number of ways, resources and some programs. Yeah.
I see. Well, I noticed that you also do a great job of spreading information and promoting resources for students, like summer camps and internships. And
absolutely, shadowing, and that's a constant challenge of making sure we can get that information up in time for them to apply and make sure that they're getting their resumes together and submitting applications. So it's a great resource for those who want a taste of science over the summer, and we do encourage folks to log into it's aboutbioscience.org to check that out. That's also one of our sites. We have two websites. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, Suzanne, with the all of the pressures on young people and teachers today in terms of keeping up with the constant testing in schools and things like that, has it become more difficult to ensure that they're aware of the tremendous career opportunities available in the sciences?
Well, I know the teachers are pretty maxed out, and one of the challenges we have is to make sure that whatever resources we provide them can be inserted immediately into their coursework, into their teaching. And so we really have to take a hard look at what the requirements are for those tests and how we can blend in the messages to what they already have to teach. They're maxed out as it is with time.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish we did have more time to introduce kids to information about bioscience careers, because there's just so much out there that especially didn't exist 10 years ago. And so it's really a matter of we need to educate the parents, and so they can help educate their children about what is out there. That's probably the biggest hurdle, is letting folks know what's available these days in biotechnology careers and the new field of biomanufacturing. The opportunities are endless at so many different levels of education, and you can do so many things, and the jobs are just really outstanding jobs.
Right. Well, here we are with an opportunity to do just some of that. I hope we have some parents and young people who will listen to this. What are some of the hot careers right now in the bioscience field?
Well, we are particularly focused on biomanufacturing.
And what is that?
Well, that is a job in the biotechnology industry that is the manufacturing of products, and it's a perfect position for someone who is self-disciplined and detail-oriented and enjoys science and possibly is interested in science and math. Mm-hmm. And one thing you'll see in maybe advertising, there are some commercials on the TV right now about biomanufacturing careers, is that they're really pushing for those folks who have been displaced in other manufacturing careers to consider a career shift, and as the industry landscape changes here in North Carolina, mm-hmm. that folks, if they go back to, say, a community college, can get additional training and can use their manufacturing experience in a different arena.
And this is something the community college system is really pushing, isn't it?
Right, right, right. Mm-hmm. And then also, you can get a four-year degree. The opportunities are endless in the biomanufacturing arena, and there are just a lot of positions out there from 2 to 4 year certificate opportunities.
And that those are also very good-paying jobs, are they
not? Absolutely. They sure are.
Now, what about for more academically oriented kids? What are some of the hot careers outside of forensics?
Outside of forensics, yes. Our mission, of course, is to encourage more folks to look at the research-related positions. I mean, the life science community is huge. There's so many. You could have a writing degree and be a science writer. You might be a people person.
You could.
And you could work in pharmaceutical sales. Or we always are encouraging folks to consider research, the basic biomedical research careers. Right. And, the field of biotechnology is blooming. And, there are really hot issues right now in science, like regenerative medicine and biofuels. They're just fascinating topics. And, might a kid consider a career that taps into these interests? It's just amazing what's out there.
Now, another one that I think many young people are not at all aware of, that my impression is that there's a huge and growing demand for, and any kids into computers and math and things like that would be well suited for, is bioinformatics.
Absolutely. Like I said, the careers available today weren't necessarily available 10 years ago. Bioinformatics, the field of nanotechnology, genetic research. There are just so many new fields that's why it's really important. Especially, I wish we could hold even more programs, the science and the cinema and the debates, just to get this level of consciousness out there for the public to see that if you have any interest in it all, there are so many solutions, career solutions out there for folks.
Sure. Well, do you think your member organizations are becoming more aware of the need to reach young people early on in order to train the scientists and researchers of tomorrow?
Well, I feel like we've had their support from day one. It really has been a constant. They know we need more students going into scientific careers.
So they have long taken the long term.
They were behind us. That's why we formed, is to, at the grassroots level, encourage public understanding and career preparedness. And, as we continue to import more and more, I guess, foreign-trained scientists, which is fabulous that there are other places in this world that can help fill our void, it would be fantastic to see North Carolina students pouring out of our community colleges and universities with the training they need to be prepared for these jobs. That's really, on our radar screen, is getting our kids ready for these jobs.
Right. And do you feel generally that I know it's not just your organization, but are those efforts being successful?
We have our work cut out for us, I think. I do. Sure. It is so much the changing face of science that we have to continue to educate folks about what these new arenas are, and that's going to be a challenge. We've got our work cut out for us, I do think.
Sure. Well, science is changing so rapidly.
It is, which is why the professional development is so important for those, you know, teachers, so they mm-hmm. can keep their kids up to date with the freshest information. And then, you know, if you look at the national assessment from the, I guess it's the science and engineering indicators from the National Science Foundation. It's on their website. It indicates the proficiency levels in the schools at grades 4, 8, and 12 are not where they should be. Yeah. And we do have our work cut out for us to keep the kids where they need to be with their understanding of science and to prepare them. So, and I definitely think the research community, this is right on their radar screen. That's why they fund us. It's mm-hmm. because they want students to be where they need to be 10 years from now in these careers. We've got to have them in there. So
right. Well, as you educate the students about these career opportunities in the sciences that we've been discussing, has the material you present to them changed significantly over the years as the needs and challenges in the sciences have changed?
Well, you know, our organization has broadened its focus over the years. We started out really focusing on basic biomedical research and the care and use of animals in research, which was the real reason why we formed, is because we had some folks in North Carolina who were opposed to the use of animals in research. So we started with a focus on that particular issue.
And we're going to get a little bit more sure. into that a little later.
But over the years, we have broadened our focus to all sorts of issues. And some of these are, you know, contentious issues, debatable. We sometimes talk about, you know, stem cell research or cloning and evolution. Mm-hmm. And we basically are trying to get sound scientific information out there so folks can make their own decisions, but we want the information to be the best that they can make educated decisions on what they believe. And so from that standpoint, we have broadened our focus.
I see. Has there been an increase in emphasis on the need for young investigators who have a broad interdisciplinary background? Have you
Yes.
put that message out? Because I know that so many organizations are going to interdisciplinary research
sure.
and that very deep expertise in just one very specific field may not be enough in the coming years.
Right. And I think our programs address that because we have talked about so many different areas in science and the collaborative nature of science and the changing nature of science mm-hmm. that you do need to be adaptable and knowledgeable, and I think that underlies all of our programs, to be honest.
I see. Okay. Well, you mentioned some of the contentious issues you address, and,
yes.
and it's great that you do that. Is correcting or attempting to correct misconceptions and misimpressions about science and research a significant part of your mission, both with students and teachers and the general
yeah,
public?
Yeah, absolutely. I think there are some definite misconceptions, be it the care and use of animals in research or how pharmaceutical research works. There are a lot of stereotypes or just misinformation, and it's incredible. I think that's really at the core of our programs, is to explain how these animals are cared for and the regulations that guide the research and what the realities are. And once we go through that process of educating a group, we find that most people are, you know, supportive of the research enterprise. It just takes a bit of showing them, you know, here's a person who can talk about his or her research, or here's a website you might want to check out and consider these facts. And that usually does the trick. We can't convert everyone, but we have done a good mm-hmm. job, I think, of reaching those folks who just are interested in more information. And there's a lot of stereotypes or misconceptions out there that we're battling. So,
mm-hmm. And that's probably a never-ending process, I imagine.
Sure, right.
My guest on Radio In Vivo today is Suzanne Wood Wilkeson, who is Deputy to the President for Programs and Communication. That's a long title you've
it
got
is long.
There. With the North Carolina Association for Biomedical Research.
Research. Mm-hmm.
Suzanne, what kind of activities and programs do you conduct to reach out to the general public about the value of biomedical research?
Sure.
Let's talk about some of those.
Well, most recently, we have done a series of Science in the Cinema programs, which is adopted from a program model that the National Institutes of Health created. And basically, we show a popular Hollywood film, and we bring in a scientific expert to talk about the scientific theme in that film. And we've done... We've shown A Beautiful Mind and talked about schizophrenia, and most recently we showed As Good As It Gets to talk about obsessive compulsive disorder, mm-hmm. and we did another one focused on evolution. We've done these at the School of Science and Math in Durham and one in Boone. And this brings in a broad public audience, and I wish we could do more of them. I would be delighted to be invited to host one of these. That's something we want to do more of in the coming year. And basically, mm-hmm. we have found that film is a great way to talk about science, that people like watching movies.
Sure.
And sometimes the science portrayed in movies is not quite accurate. You know, Hollywood takes some liberties to make the
Absolutely.
Film sell.
It's
and
art.
So, but if it's an avenue to get people talking, that's wonderful. So we would like to do more of those programs, obviously. And then in the past, we have done a series of debates in biomedicine. Mm-hmm. And we have brought in scientific experts to talk about such issues as cloning, therapeutic and reproductive cloning, and DNA testing, both from the health insurance aspect versus DNA databases for the crime scene investigation purposes, and then also xenotransplantation, use of animal organs for human transplant. We've talked about some touchy issues.
Sure.
And those were a lot of fun, actually.
So do you bring in a scientist for those?
Right.
Who is involved
sometimes several.
Directly
and
in those fields?
We will bring in someone perhaps with a legal background, always a bioethicist, to talk about all the layers of these issues are never black and white. And so we like to bring in the different angles. And we've had students in the audience and general public members, and we had a great run with that, and we actually have those available on a video series for folks who, if they're teaching about these topics, can get these and incorporate them into their classrooms.
I see.
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine you've gotten some pretty lively discussions going.
Oh, we have. We have. And particularly at the debates, it's interesting that we were talking about the cloning issue about 1998, I believe, and people are still talking about it. You know, it's been almost 9-10 years. And sure. these issues have not resolved themselves. So I think it's time. We would love to do another program on cloning. And it we do get a lot of folks in attendance at our programs who are, obviously, they're fascinated by these issues and they are concerned citizens. So I would love to broaden the scope and the reach of these programs to bring in more North Carolinians. I'd like to see more people in our seats.
So, So are there any plans in place for?
Yeah, we're working on
new ones.
Having at least one more Science in the Cinema this year. We haven't picked our movie yet, but I will be happy to tell you so we can make sure the public knows about it.
Okay.
And then
probably not Shrek the Third.
Probably not. yeah, that's an iron in the fire right now. So within the next few months, we will have another one of those, and. I think I may have just skipped over one of the avenues for reaching the general public. We've done some public service announcements, and that's something I don't want to forget because we have used university students to help us create those messages. And that's been a fun thing to do with university students here at Chapel Hill. And they have played one across the state for quite a long time, for many, many months. So that was one way that we have reached out to the public over the television that I wouldn't mind doing a few more of those, because that's a neat project.
Sure.
Well worth the time.
Well, I know that you've also been very active and increasingly active in establishing web-based resources
right.
for people to visit and learn more about the benefits of bioscience research. You mentioned the new Clearinghouse
right.
website. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Sure. It launched in October.
And give the site again.
It is aboutbioscience.org, www.aboutbioscience.org.
Mm-hmm.
And we invite the public to log in. And we have issue briefs on a variety of bioscience topics. We have an extensive glossary for those who just need some background information. And then we also have links and a professional development opportunities for teachers are listed there throughout the state. And then also opportunities for students for camps, mentoring, volunteering opportunities. So I really strongly suggest the young people log in. And of course, the career profiles that we have available. It's a growing site. And we hope to add, I would love to see some video components. We're hoping to get some different material on there soon. So that's,
well, after today, maybe we'll get some audio components
right,
on
right,
there.
Absolutely. Right.
You mentioned career profiles. Now, are those text-based career profiles of working scientists?
Well, we don't profile an actual individual, but we do give overviews of the career, what you might expect. So we have not interviewed Joe Scientist in Chapel Hill. It is a general what you might expect in this career, schooling required, day in the life, issues involved, and salary expectations, averages. So
I see. That must be a great resource for kids to come on and take a look at.
It is. So I invite them to log in. It is. It is. I wish it existed when I was going through school, because I would have been interested.
Same here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Suzanne, is part of NCABR's mission also to educate North Carolinians about the rapidly growing economic importance of bioscience in our state?
Absolutely. And at the very core of what we do is to create a community that is conducive to the research enterprise and that attracts business here. We want people bringing their medical research biotechnology companies to North Carolina. It is a terrific industry, and we are growing every day, but we need to have those students prepared for careers, and we need that public that is inviting and welcoming.
And of course, there's a continuum there in that the more informed public we have and the better prepared a workforce we have, the more attractive it will be for those industries to come in.
Right. Mm-hmm. So we encourage people. I think the Biotech Center, the North Carolina Biotechnology Center, has done a great job of showing the economic benefits of the biotechnology industry. And we invite people to really check out their resources on their website to talk about industry impacts. Mm-hmm. But it really is our goal to make sure that we can support that industry with public sentiment, know-how, and preparedness.
So you really are one of the elements of that very broad public-private partnership that exists here.
Right.
That has really been so unique around the country and has made particularly, the Research Triangle area such a world-class place.
We are the only organization of our kind in the state, obviously, and we do have a few sister organizations across the country because we do pool resources, interact with our sister organizations to make sure that we're benefiting from their trial and error efforts and the resources they've put together. So we do stay connected at a national level with these other organizations to make sure, and we do share our resources with them and their programs with us, and so we are learning from each other all the time to make sure that we're taking programs that are successful in California and making sure they're getting here in North Carolina.
So. That's great. Well, Suzanne, you've touched on it already, and I certainly did want to get to it in some depth. Another integral element of the mission of the NCABR is to educate the public about the responsible use of animals in biomedical research.
Right.
And obviously that's a very hot topic that many people are very concerned about, and of course some people are adamantly opposed to.
Right.
I'd like to spend some time going over the positions espoused by your organizations as representatives of the bioscientific enterprise here in North Carolina. And to help us address this, I thought what we could do maybe is I might ask you some of the questions that appear on your website as frequently asked questions.
Oh, I hope I can answer them.
I'm sure you can. And as you go over these positions, I want to remind our listeners that, this is not set up to be a debate. And on a future edition of Radio In Vivo, we will certainly hear from folks on the other side of this issue. But just to hear what kind of material is your group is putting out to the public, I think it's important to share with our listeners. Okay, well, your first FAQ is, Why use animals?
Well, because we need to.
Okay.
We have always said that, you know, not only does the FDA require that all prescriptions and over-the-counter medications be tested on animals before they are used in humans, we asked the question, if we didn't have animals, what would we do? And right now we don't have many viable alternatives that work realistically. So do we test on the human first or the animal? And if we do it in a humane and controlled way, we would support that, yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what are the most commonly used animal models in research?
By far, the rodents, mice and rats, and that comprises about 95% of the total animals used.
Mm-hmm.
And what a lot of people in the public find interesting is that the cats and dogs, which I think a lot of people assume are being used in research, really are used less than 1% of all the animals used. So it really typically is the rats and the mice by far.
Mm-hmm.
Of all the animals.
I see. And which animals are studied for their unique characteristics?
Oh, gosh. I could be here all day talking about all the various animal models that we have.
Sure.
But definitely we... we see studies done in rabbits sometimes, less and less so, and primarily the rats and the mice that are being genetically engineered for disease studies.
Mm-hmm.
And
such as so-called knockout.
Absolutely.
Mice,
knockout
and things like
genes.
That.
Mm-hmm. And you name it, we've had scorpion research and spiders, insects, even birds. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to name a animal that has not at one point in time contributed to medical research. It really is. And we actually have a laundry list on our site that people could log in and see. But like I said, again, it's more and more the rats and mice these
sure.
days. Less and less non-human primates and even rabbits, even
mm-hmm.
less so. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Not to mention the sort of classical model.
Pigs,
but even things like zebrafish, roundworms.
Right.
I've had a couple of folks here on the show that, you know, spend their lives on fruit flies and roundworms.
Yeah, a lot of fruit flies.
Yeah. Where would we be without animal research?
I honestly don't want to know. I have to remind people that... just about every major medical research discovery that we have, from vaccines and treatments for all the major diseases, have come as a result of animal research. And again, I would encourage people to check out our website to read specifically about instances, but you know, we no longer have polio, and we have childhood vaccines and antibiotics and asthma care, vitamins. I would rather not know where we would be. I'm glad I'm in a world that has these discoveries.
Sure. You know, something that I'm sure a lot of people are continuously concerned about is, you know, the care and treatment of
sure.
animals used in research. Well, which laws, regulations, guidelines govern that, and how well do they tend to be followed?
Sure. And that is, I think, the one place where the public is probably the least clear on how the animal research enterprise is regulated. And it is our job to tell people that, you know, each research facility is required by law under the Animal Welfare Act of 1966 to have an institutional animal care and use committee to regulate that research and to make sure that the institution is in compliance with federal regulations, and that there are spot inspections by these groups. And then also the USDA, Department of Agriculture, does spot inspections on a routine basis. And should there be a violation with a regulation, there is a short amount of time that is given for any violation to be addressed and solved. And if that violation is not fixed within a very short amount of time, that research facility would face severe fines or be closed down. There was really no tolerance for not adhering to the federal policies.
And we've certainly seen instances of that happening.
Right. And then, you know, also within the scientific community, there's the American Association for the Accreditation of Laboratory Animal Care, ELAC, which is a peer body of scientists who accredit institutions, and that's seen within the scientific community as the, you know, good housekeeping seal of approval for these institutions. So there are layers, both internal and external federal government regulations, that continuously spot check to make sure these facilities are running just as they say they are, and that the animals are being cared by the scientists in accordance with these federal regulations that are clearly set forth in the Animal Welfare Act of 1966.
I see. And one thing that I've heard about recently, and maybe you know a little bit more about, is that there is a scientific enterprise going on to address the reduction in use of animals.
Sure. I think
in research.
The people who work with animals really do care for these animals, and they have a lot of respect for their animals. So they, before anyone else, would love to see fewer animals used, refined techniques that use as few as possible. Mm-hmm. And wouldn't it be nice to have a day when we had the technology to substitute for an animal? We're not there yet, but the animal researcher is the first on the list to want a substitute.
Mm-hmm. I know, NIEHS has had a initiative going on for several years addressing alternatives.
Alternatives, absolutely. And I think given the choice, they would like an alternative, but we're not there right now.
Sure.
And so it has been a push over the last 15, 20 years to refine the procedures and reduce the numbers of animals and only use them when they absolutely have to be used, but they still do have to be used. So
what do you find when you are working on getting this message out to the public? Are there some people that just don't want to hear it?
There will, I think, always be people who will not be receptive to our messages, and we tend to focus on the whole public, and we know there will be people we can't persuade, no matter how much information we connect them with the right experts to talk firsthand, one-on-one. I think we really look towards, there's a body of people kind of on the fence. We have the people who are in support of the research, and then we have those on the fence, and we really do know we have potential with them, that if given the information, they can make decisions, and we think we can persuade them with the facts. And then there are people we just know we can't persuade, and we just, you know, listen to them, and we take what they say, and we provide them with resources, and where they go from there, some people we can't reach.
Sure. Well, I'm sure the most important part of it is just simply getting that accurate information out
there. Right. Mm-hmm. And if there are videos circulating of animal abuse, sometimes these videos are 20 years old or they're not accurate. And so we just want to say, who are your sources? When you get this information about abuse or how animals shouldn't be used, please tell us your sources. I want to know. Anyone in the research industry would want to know where this is happening so we could shut that institution down.
Right.
And, you know, it's interesting. We work with a lot of students every year. The School of Science and Math does an ethics forum statewide. We bring in students to talk about all sorts of ethical issues, and we always talk about the care and use of animals. And it is really interesting, the messages that the young students are getting, high school students are getting, about the care and use of animals. And we sit there, and I always bring in one of our experts from the Triangle local area just to help me with some of the, with what they've heard, and to correct these misconceptions. And they are getting a lot of messages in the schools about how animals are treated and used, and some of it is so outdated or just simply never was true. That's a challenge, and it is interesting. We love working with the students because they are so passionate. They're often passionate for or against.
Sure.
And they do have a great interest in this topic. You know, students are interested in animals and they want to know. So that's been a real fulfilling opportunity is to interact with them at that forum and provide them with information. And really, we take a vote at the end of our session when we go through a case study to see. And we do have a great impact on providing the kids the information, and they do make some really good choices. We don't reach all the kids. That's exactly my point. There are some students we will never be able to reach.
Sure.
Because
sure.
They're in their camp. They're mm-hmm. behind the mm-hmm. animal rights community, and that's where they're going to stay. But
well, it must be exciting to see that passion wherever
it
springs up from.
I know. I wish it would rub off on the parents and the grandparents and the neighbors, because they really are very passionate at that age about these social issues and ethical issues.
Well, here's another one that I know NCABR has taken a proactive position about. And that is educating teachers and students about evolution and evolutionary theory,
right?
Which, you know, in certain pockets of North Carolina is still going to be a hot button.
Right. It is a tough issue. But we have found when we did two teacher workshops this year for the school teachers that they're eager to come and to get these examples of evolutionary science. We do talk about it from a scientific standpoint, or what are some of these examples, these everyday relevant examples you can use in the classroom to demonstrate how evolution has worked and is working and is a fundamental part of the life sciences. And we don't engage in a religious debate.
Sure.
We just provide the information. And we had one of your other interview subjects, Greg Ray, speak for us at the Science Teacher Convention.
Mm-hmm.
And also at Science in the Cinema. He's a fantastic public speaker when it comes to
that. As I certainly found out.
Right. Yeah. Oh, gosh. I wish we could have him every day come to our programs. And I don't remember at the two teacher workshops we had, if we had a single person that opposed to the teaching of evolution. I think they just won't help. I mm-hmm. think they need the support and the examples. And a lot of them told us, quite frankly, we're not having as much trouble in the classroom as you might think.
Is that right?
Really? Yeah, because I polled a lot of teachers because I needed to know where are we.
We're a little bit ahead of Kansas then.
Oh, definitely. Definitely mm-hmm. from talking to the teachers, and I want to stay that way.
So, yeah, indeed.
Yeah.
And judging by the recent Republican debate, apparently we may be ahead of 30% of the Republican Party. Did you hear about that?
I did not hear about that debate.
Well, I think it was Chris Matthews asked the 10 candidates if they did not believe in the theory of evolution, and three of them raised their hands.
Yikes. Well, that's where organizations like NCBR comes in, because
right.
we have the information. And if we can, and again, also like the animal research issue, I don't think we'll reach every person out there. We have a lot of people who are open to learning about science. And if you were to interpret the Bible literally, I'm sure some of those folks would probably not take our information at face value and be receptive to it. And so we understand that. But if you would come and listen to Greg Ray, we would invite you, you know, to come listen to our scientists talk about these. You know, let's talk about antibiotic resistance and how species are changing. Mm-hmm. We have some really mm-hmm. cool examples we could talk about that hits home today. And no, we're not going to reach everyone.
Sure. Well, you know, another good example of that is the growing convergence of evolutionary theory and medicine itself.
Right.
Starting really tomorrow, Nesant, one of my underwriters, has a three-day conference going talking about those very kinds of things and how evolutionary biology can contribute to advances in medicine.
Absolutely. And we'd like to, we have done some program work with Nesant and would love to continue to do that. And you're absolutely right. You can't really take evolution out of medical science. It's there, and it underlies many of the sciences, but also medical science. And like I said, the antibiotic resistance is a big concern these days. So
absolutely.
Why people are taking them and the great volumes they're taking them and what that's going to do in the future to their effectiveness, that's a big one.
It definitely is, absolutely. Well, Suzanne, anything new and exciting on the horizon for NCABR?
Well, we are churning out our teacher workshops right now. We're working on our schedule, so if you happen to know a K-12 educator, I would please encourage you to check on log on to our website, www.ncbr.org. We'll have a whole series of professional development opportunities online soon for registration as early as July. And like I said, we will have information about Science in the Cinema program. Hopefully, we're aiming for late summer, August or September. Mm-hmm. And, of course, our website. Please log in to the aboutbioscience.org site to see. We would have listed on that site what programs we're doing and where you can go throughout North Carolina to meet a researcher, have your child participate in a volunteering opportunity or a shadowing opportunity. So,
and I'm sure that will be an evolving resource as well.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, Susanna, our time is actually just about up, believe it or not. And it's been a fascinating hour. And I want to thank you for taking the time to come in and educate our Radio In Vivo listening audience about the important work being conducted by the North Carolina Association for Biomedical Research. So please keep up the good work and let us know as you have new events and programs being released.
Well, thank you so much for having us.
And we've got some great guests lined up in the coming weeks here on Radio In Vivo. You can always check out the website for the lineup, and we do update that regularly as we book new appearances. So please join us again next time for Radio In Vivo, your link to the Triangle Science community, right here on volunteer-powered WCOM-FM, Carrboro and Chapel Hill. If you enjoy the program, we would ask that you please make an effort to support the station by volunteering, contributing, or underwriting our programming. See you next time.
By pressing down the special key.